Welcome to the Spirit of Work solo episodes of the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. If you long to see happier and more humane workplaces and want to reflect on how that could happen, you are in the right place. These monthly solo episodes are based on my book, The Spirit of Work, Timeless Wisdom, Current Realities. The book was written from three complementary sources of knowledge. One, the sacred writings of the world's spiritual traditions. Two, scientific developments on human behavior and well-being in the workplace. And three, insightful experiences from business, my clients, and my own work. In each episode, I elaborate on one of the ideas from the book and ask questions to help us all think more holistically about work. Join me as we combine the wisdom of the past and the reading of our current realities to build the future of work. And now for today's episode. Welcome to Spirit of Work, Episode 8, where I speak about some aspect of the book that I wrote, The Spirit of Work, and help to apply it to the workplace. So today I'm going to talk about the virtues sequence for problem solving and identifying strengths. This is something that I discovered when working with a colleague to write a paper that we actually never had published, where we looked through the world religion's sacred writings to be able to find if there was something that was common that could help people solve workplace problems. And we found something quite interesting. We found a sequence that was mentioned in multiple places, in parts, and then in entirety in several places. And it always followed the same trajectory. The first one is love. The second one is truth. The third one is justice. The fourth is unity. The fifth is peace. And the last one is abundance. Now, let me tell you what we discovered about that. As we were discussing and reading these different things and trying to figure out what we would write in this paper, which someday we will have to publish, we discovered that if you are missing that first quality of love or care, you can call it care or compassion in the workplace, you can't move forward into any of the rest. So, for example, if we just want to redistribute wealth, which would be a quality of abundance and justice, it doesn't hold, it doesn't stick because we haven't developed the relationships that require us to see people as being the beautiful, capable human beings that they are with multiple talents and equal worth. And so I'm going to show you how this works. Each of the virtues in the virtues sequence are necessary for helping to solve a problem. And if there is a problem that you can't solve, you will find it in the virtues sequence somewhere. So let me give you some workplace examples. There's a fabrication plant that I worked with a few years ago. So they constructed units that were built according to certain designs for customers for a variety of different out-of-the-way places. So, you know, they would have a turnkey constructed solution to something depending on the workplace and depending on the living requirements of wherever this remote place was. And then they would ship these units all over the place. And so this fabrication plant had a consistent problem that everybody was complaining about. A customer would say that there was a mistake in the design of something that they had ordered several times in a row. And they kept finding the same mistake over and over again. And the customers were getting really angry and frustrated with this. And it caused some loss of business to the company, as you can imagine. And the people who were the managers, who were sort of in the front and the middle, didn't know what was going on or why this kept happening. So when we traced it, we found out that what happened was the customer was speaking to the wrong person because the people who are making the unit are not the people who make the design. And that was removed by about four different departments. And if the people who were making the unit sent a message to the people who were creating the designs, the blueprints, and the necessary engineering and architectural requirements, they didn't listen to them because they felt that those people down at the bottom were not worthy of their consideration. And they didn't realize that the person who is closest to the job is the expert on the job. So the person who is closest to the job of making those fabrication units and the closest to the customer receiving the feedback from the customer is the expert on both those things, making the units and also listening to the customer's needs. So the people who were in the design department thought, you know, we have more education, we have more experience, we're so much more superior to those people that are just laborers on the front. So why should we listen to them? And that is a lack of love. Think about that. So what was missing in that particular situation was that they didn't care about each other. They didn't know each other. They hadn't even met most of the time. And they also had no workflow process to capture feedback that went back up to the designers. Now, What they did was they implemented the workflow process and it still didn't work. And why do you think it didn't work? Because there was no relationship development. There was no sense of care. There was no sense of equal humanity being involved. So what was missing was that the people in the design department and the people in the fabrication operations department needed to sit down and talk together and probably include the customer in that, which takes me to the justice quotient, which is bring everybody who's involved into the room at the same time. I'll talk more about that later, but that's one of the things that's necessary if you want to get to justice. You can't make decisions on behalf of people that are not there. And so because none of them were there in the room, they were making decisions based on assumptions, and incorrect data is inevitably wrong. So they had incorrect data, they had a workflow process that they were not using because they didn't have any relationships with each other and did not see each other as all being equally human. Okay, so the way to fix that is to introduce people to each other and to get them to listen carefully to what the other person has to say and to realize how valuable their feedback is. That leads you to truth. So once you get past the love beginning part, you find out the truth of the situation. The truth of the situation was that customers were making design change requirements and they couldn't get any satisfaction. And also that the workflow was not being used. And so once they realized that and everybody came together on it, they moved to justice, which was that the customer's concerns were heard, the people who were in the front lines were listened to, and the workflow that had been put in place in order to respond to design changes started to be used more consistently. And they reached a place of justice. So in the virtuous sequence, that's where they ended up, was there. Now, the ultimate goal after that is unity. So people start working together, they start consulting each other, the design department, the people in the front line making the units, and the people in between would start saying, maybe we need to have, you know, once a week or once a month team meetings to talk about what design issues have come up or what other types of issues, operational issues or sales issues have come up that we should address as a team. That's leading towards unity. As those concerns get listened to and people start dealing with them, they arrive at peace because they don't have all of this frustration and this irritation between everybody. They are working together towards a common goal. That common goal is the service of the customer, right? Which is the noble purpose of every job. Every job has some kind of a noble purpose. And in this case, they're serving the purpose of giving a nice place for somebody to live when they're in a remote area that is comfortable and that allows them to get a good night's sleep and eat and go to work the next day. And they know the end user is the person who's using it, and then the customer is the one who's ordering the units. And so lots of people are served in the noble purpose of this particular fabrication company. And when that happens, as people start to work together, love, truth, justice, unity, and peace, they arrive at abundance because everything works so much more smoothly and the word gets around and people refer and you end up having more people ordering these units and people giving great referrals and saying how much they enjoyed working with the company. And so it leads to a better bottom line and everybody benefits from abundance. So that is an example of how the virtuous sequence can work. Now, it can also work in other circumstances. So let me give you a couple more examples. So let's say you've got an example of a manager who is having some personal issues in his or her life and marginalizes and belittles the staff and doesn't realize that they are doing that out of their own pain. So the staff then feels that they have lost competence. They don't believe that they are good and competent people, which is what the adult ego is based on. And so they start to fear the manager and they fear each other and they close the doors and they don't communicate. And all of those things happen as a result of the manager not being able to face up to his or her own issues and speaking to them. Instead, they get deflected onto the work team. I'm sure you've experienced this because I don't know anyone who hasn't experienced that at some point, either in the family, at work, or both. And so if we want to use the virtue sequence to think about addressing this problem, what's missing is truth. The manager is not telling himself or herself the truth about why this irritation and this blame is coming up. It's because of the personal issues in their own lives. And when you are not getting your own needs met, what happens is you just take it out on other people and you reenact the trauma because it makes you feel momentarily better to undermine and disqualify other people. But after you've had that sudden jolt of dopamine hit afterwards, you realize how harmful that was. Then you criticize yourself and you go back into the same negative cycle. So truth was what was missing in that one. And it had to be that the manager could say, I am experiencing these personal issues and I want to solve them, which takes them back to love. Who is being affected? How am I feeling unloved? what is the situation here at home that is affecting the way I'm working with people at work? And how can I see those people on my team as being human beings worthy of my respect and a dignified treatment? All of that, then it's where most workplace problems are, is they're stuck in between love and truth and justice on the bottom of the virtues sequence. So here's another example of people saying that they are working towards unity and justice and that they have peaceful intent, but they don't really mean it. This is something you see in the way many places are embracing having an indigenous land claim, but they don't really mean it. They're just trying to get the verbiage right so that they can check the box off and say, okay, I've satisfied my indigenous stakeholders. It doesn't feel authentic. And the reason it doesn't feel authentic is because it isn't. It's not based on the truth of wanting to know more. It's not based on the desire to get to know the people who were on the original land and what their struggles have been, and to name those truths and those injustices and say, okay, how can we move forward together, which would move them towards unity and abundance, right? It doesn't happen because it's inauthentic. And that is also something that you'll see when people promote someone that they think they should promote because they are a person of color or they're from some marginalized community. They promote them and they tell them they're competent, but they don't really believe it. And they end up undermining them at work with things that cause them to be demoted again. And then they say, oh, well, I guess that person wasn't a good fit. When in fact, it was motivated by a discriminatory intent that people did not want to name, right? So if you want to promote somebody, you have to feel and experience and sense and know that that person is worth promoting and not undermine them afterwards, because if you're undermining them, you didn't think they were worthy to begin with, right? So again, this is getting stuck in the love and truth and justice part, and inauthenticity really causes that problem. And when you strip it all away, it's because in their own jobs and in their own lives, people do not feel that their needs are being met, and that they don't have the love and the appreciation and acknowledgement that they need. And therefore, they dump their pain on the people around them. So this requires all of us to be accountable, to be human beings who say, you know what? I am responsible for this now. No matter what happens in my life, I'm responsible for it. And I'm going to do my best to be my best self. The best self is your true self. So we can reverse difficult processes from two sides. One is the spiritual side and one is the emotional side. And I'm going to show you how Lisa Earle McLeod does it. She has many wonderful books, but I really liked her book called Selling with Noble Purpose, where she ignites an entire unified approach from multiple companies that were just drowning in their difficulties by letting them remember what it's like to serve the customer. And when you truly serve the customer, you become reconnected with the sense of noble purpose that your job is intended to be. And so she does this, and she calls people that are in very dysfunctional companies to their noble purpose by helping them remember what it was like when they had a good customer experience. And then when they did something for a customer that was truly appreciated, and that leads to solving all the problems because they get back on the virtues path of love, truth, justice, unity, peace, and abundance. Here's another way you can do that. You can recall the legacy of your family and say, you know what? Look how we got through difficulties. We sustained all of this. We gained all of these strengths. We learned all of these skills. We did this over generations, no matter what we were faced with. And that means that we're here for a reason to accomplish something meaningful. And so looking back at your family legacy, you can pick out something that was inspirational and that has built your sense of who you are and in the sense of who you, your best self is. Well, you're acknowledging that it wasn't perfect and there were lots of issues. Still, moving forward with what is my legacy to carry forward. This gives a sense of purpose and helps you get back on to the virtues path, right? The other thing to remember is that when people don't have empathy, it's because they don't experience empathy in their own lives. And a great exercise that one of my colleagues introduced to me a few years ago was to use a foreign language that nobody in the room could understand for 10 minutes of frustration to increase patience towards newcomers for whom English was third, fourth, or fifth language. And so this colleague, who was from the Punjabi region, and she spoke quite a few different languages, and she designed an exercise where she took people through 10 minutes of trying to explain to them how to use some simple vocabulary, like how to count to 10 in one of those languages, how to say hello, how to say, this is my name, what's your name, things like that, that you would think would be quite easy, but they aren't that easy when you're pretty much scared to death because you don't understand anything. She used signs that were written in that language with a different script. So it wasn't even a script that people were used to. And it was 10 minutes that within the first 5 minutes, people were starting to cry. These are CEOs of companies who are used to being in control, and now all of a sudden, they just feel like they're completely out of control. And at that point, she would stop the exercise and she would say, "Now, this is what it feels like to all those people that you are directing, for whom English is not a first language. It's scary, it's frustrating, and you couldn't even handle it for 5 to 10 minutes, and this is what they're dealing with 8 hours a day, every single day of the week." She reignited their sense of empathy by giving them an experience of what it felt like. And that's something you can use too. What does something feel like for another person helps you to walk a mile in their moccasins, right? So this is another interesting way to get back onto the virtue sequence. Another thing that you can use is something that my daughter-in-law's adopted mother invented to work with teachers in Haiti who were used to using corporal punishment in very extreme ways with students, and that was their only tool for discipline. And she asked them to recall times when they were physically punished and it took a toll on them, and what did it feel like to them? And then when they remembered that, she asked them what they were capable of doing in that moment, and it was nothing because they were frozen with fear. So from there, she said, "Now imagine if there was a way that you could bring about a disciplined, orderly, and calm environment that didn't involve hurting people or evoking fear. And what would you like to know about that?" And at that point, they could hardly wait to find out. And so then she would show them some tools about collaborative decision making, and they would try it out and see how that worked and compliment each other and encourage each other. So it was really beautiful. So she ignited their indignity towards injustice by recalling a time when they were treated unfairly. You could take, I think, I haven't tried it yet, but I'm sure that any despotic leader, you could evoke in that person what it felt like when they were treated badly at some point by someone in their lives, which must have happened a lot for them to become despots, and have them feel that to reignite their sense of empathy. That would put them back on the trail of love, truth, justice, unity, peace, and abundance. So the final comment that I wanted to let everybody know about is that this virtue sequence is not just for solving problems in the workplace, but it's also about doing a reassessment for yourself. I use it all the time to say, wait a minute, in this moment, I'm feeling judgmental towards people. I wonder what that could be. And as I look at the virtue sequence, I can pretty much always pinpoint where it is. What's missing? Is it unity? Is it justice? Is it love? Is it truth? Is it that we've reached the point where we need to move into abundance and we haven't taken the courageous step that requires? I don't know. I just have to ask myself that question. So it helps me to bring myself to account, to recognize the places where I've done well in the virtue sequence that day and where I can move forward the next day. And it also helps me to recognize what emotional and physical needs I may have that are not being met. Maybe I'm sleepy or hungry, or I haven't had enough social interaction or playtime, which often happens to adults. And so then that ends up making me feel more judgmental and irritated towards other people. So I hope this was useful. Just as a note of acknowledgement, it is not easy to practice the virtues because we are not used to it. We're encouraged in the society around us to criticize, to polarize, to judge, and to take pride in how we can beat other people down. And that means we've become quite well accustomed to practicing vice instead of virtue. So we've practiced all these qualities that make the world a horrible place to live in and make us feel bad and unhealthy. And in order to start practicing the virtue sequence, it requires some courageous steps and some willingness to be vulnerable. And that's not an easy thing to do. So celebrate every little moment that you can bring yourself closer to that ideal. You don't have to be perfect at it. You just need to take another step forward. And so acknowledge that it's difficult. Acknowledge that we're creating a new society and a new world order that is based on the qualities of what it really means to be human instead of the opposite. And then take your step and be happy with that step that you did today. The more you do it, and the more you practice it in the company of others, the more natural it feels, and the healthier you and society will be. So that is my little story about the book. It is from page 40, The Virtues Progression. It's only 4 paragraphs long, but I was able to create a little bit more context by explaining to you how this looks in the workplace and in people's personal lives. And I hope you liked it. And if you did, please share it, because that's how we get more people listening to the podcast, is by sharing the episodes with someone else. Thank you for listening, and may culture and leadership connections continue to guide and inspire your day. Newsflash. Listeners can now interact with Culture and Leadership Connections podcast by leaving a voice or text message on Fan List. It is a fun and quick way to let me know what you liked, ask a question, or leave a suggestion. I will feature some of the voice messages on upcoming episodes. You might be surprised to hear your own voice, but only if you leave a message, of course. So to leave your personal message or your question, go to shiftworkplace.com/podcast and click on the fan list link to leave it. I can hardly wait to hear what you have to say.